You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 524. If you can't do what you imagine, then what is imagination to you? Kid Cudi.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's film, B-I-Z, book.com. Hey guys, before we get started, I want to let you know that we are having our annual Black Friday sale at Indie Film Hustle Academy and Indie Film Hustle TV. If you are interested in learning more about screenwriting and filmmaking, film distribution, learning screenwriting and character development from instructors like James V. Hart, the writer of Hook and Dracula, learning film distribution from me with my course, The Film Distribution Blueprint, learning how to produce an independent film from veteran producer Suzanne Lyons, how to pitch investors the indie film funding formula, and so much more. So head over to ifhacademy.com and use the coupon code BLACKFRIDAY2021. And you can also go to indiefilmhustle.tv and use the same coupon code BLACKFRIDAY2021 to get 30% off the annual subscription. Now, this sale is only going to be going on until November 30th, so act quickly. Again, ifhacademy.com and indiefilmhustle.tv, coupon code BLACKFRIDAY2021 for 30% off everything. Well, guys, today on the show, we got director, producer, writer Robert Alexander, and we're here to discuss his new film, A Man Called Scott, The Kid Cudi Story. Now, I had the pleasure of watching this documentary. It's on Amazon Prime as we speak, and I really didn't know, to be honest with you, I didn't know a whole lot about Kid Cudi prior to being introduced to him by this documentary, and I was really floored by what Robert did and how he was able to get inside of Cudi's creative process, how he opens himself up to the world. And I honestly was just looking at it as an artist connecting with his audience, and Kid Cudi has been able to do that at a very, very deep level, and it is a fascinating documentary to watch. And I wanted to get Robert on to talk about what it was like working with Kid Cudi, his other amazing show that he has on HBO called The Shop, which we'll talk about as well, and so much more. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Robert Alexander. I'd like to welcome to the show Robert Alexander. How you doing, Robert?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We were just talking right before we started recording that I had a chance to see your amazing new film, A Man Called Scott, The Kid Cudi Story. And we were talking a little bit about it, being that I've heard of Cudi, his name, because I love hip-hop, I love rap. And I'd heard that name fly in the background. I'm like, oh yeah, and I saw him guest spot or something. But I really didn't know who he was or the kind of impact he was having on not just fans, but on other artists. Yeah, you know, sure. And then after I watched it, it was pretty remarkable. But before we go down that rabbit hole, how did you get started doing this?
I mean, I think that's That's a layered thing, you know. I mean, I was gonna be, I didn't know what I was doing, to be honest. You know, I grew up in a really small town. There was a trajectory that I was going to just be a professional athlete, and I went and played soccer at Syracuse. And, you know, there was some, you know, looking to go play in Europe or MLS or something after that. But I always played sports because I just need to fit in where I grew up. And that was the easiest way to do it. Mm. There were, you know, I grew up in a place where like there wasn't a lot of diversity, and you know, you were constantly alienated and labeled within your stereotype. And so sports was the easy way to kind of avoid all that stuff. He's good at sports, so everything else kind of falls into place. But I always had just an inkling to be an artist. So, you know, I got through half my college career and then decided I wanted to move to New York City and, you know, take pictures of cats and try to be an artist and that sort of thing. And I moved to New York and I started doing all sorts of different stuff. I mean, I would write. I wrote a lot. I worked on some commercials. I did some music video stuff. I got creative directed. I worked as an animator, as an editor for a long time. So mm-hmm. honestly, a little bit of everything. I take a lot of pride, and there's nothing like on set or in post that I don't know how to do, you know, so it kind of limits the. You know, when somebody tells you, oh, we can't get it done in that time or this way or whatever, because it's like, no, I've done it. You've done it. We've done it. We're going to figure it out together, which I think is a really, really important thing, is just kind of understanding the space. And then I fell into just, you know, directing. I felt like because I didn't go to film school and I'm self-taught as a photographer, which was still my first love, is working as a photographer. I didn't really have a strong sense of like, oh, what does this ultimately all lead up to or mean? And then it just kind of fell into that space where it's like, okay, directing is kind of what I do. And so I'm just kind of continuing on that path and just exploring it and kind of, you know, imagining it as it makes sense to me. Cause you know, our definitions versus who we are within it is different for everybody. So I'm just, you know, still trying to kind of define that space.
We're trying to figure it all out, brother. We're all trying to figure it out. And it's so funny because you and I have similar backgrounds, because I was an editor for 20 odd years while I was directing commercials and music videos and things like that. So I was, anytime I was on set, anyone's like, oh, we can't fix that in post. I'm like, the only person who could say I could fix it in post is me, because I'm going to be the fixing. No one else is allowed to say fix it in post.
Yeah. And the time and the money and all that, of course.
Yeah, and also it's a great, as a director, it is such a great asset to have in your, or tool in your toolbox, to just know what's going to happen in post, and also makes you shoot more efficiently and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's such an important thing, is like, you know, to be able to, you know, within reason, you want to have your freedom and you want to capture what you've always imagined and then the new ideas that's, you know, sprout in the moment on the day, but you also need to think about shooting for the edit and what's going to work and what's going to play and why it's going to play and what you're going to need the extra of, because you're going to have to experiment a little bit, you know. And you know, it's like, this is the moment that we're going to be able to get away with, and it's phenomenal, and we're going to make this work, you know. So you have to just always balance that, because it's a process, you know, and time is a beautiful thing, and also something that can be super dangerous to us, is understanding how much or how little we have for anything that we're trying to accomplish at a certain level. So
we never have enough time. Have you ever heard this statement? All you have is time and money. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard that statement to you?
No, but it's like so little time and so little money.
But never like, man, take as long as you want, and it don't even worry about the money.
No, it never happens, man. It never happens. And so I think that's part of the art form. It's the beauty when people can find a way to live within those parameters, you know, and still, you know, walk away with something that they're really proud of. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how did you get involved with the shop? Is that your creation, or did you just get brought in? How did that
hold? There was a digital version of it. I think there was a collaboration with Beats. Uh-huh. So I live in LA now. I was in New York for 17 years before that. And the way I got to LA is, you know, I'd worked on another doc project on an athlete that I was working with, Maverick Carter and LeBron's Spring Hill Uninterrupted, and there was looking to potentially acquire the film and that sort of thing. And when we were talking about that, they, you know, we seemed to just kind of get on really well, and they were developing a lot of production and elevating a lot of the creative production work that they were doing. And they asked me to come and lead a lot of that. So they asked me to move out to LA to kind of lead a lot of that stuff. And so within that, one of the properties was the shop. And so, you know, I was asked to kind of lead that on a kind of a, you know, the executive level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just something, as I saw, like, just kind of how we were operating it and certain things, it was just something exciting that I was just, you know, wanted to, you know, take over. And so once it started, you know, when it lived on HBO, you know, I was involved in that from the beginning and just been kind of running with that and trying to do my best to push it and elevate it and try new things in that space. So
now I have to ask you, man, how was it like directing an ex-president?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Mr. Obama. Like, I mean, yeah. What was that experience like? I can imagine. I can only imagine.
It was great, man. You know, he has such this beautiful presence, mm-hmm. and power and calmness to him. He is so intelligent, but spends a lot of time thinking about what he's saying, you know, and just make sure it presented the way that is presidential and powerful and awe informing and all that great stuff. It's a highlight without question, man. That's like it's one of those just great highlights of life. You know, I was, it moved super fast, as far as like, you know, everything we had to do to kind of get in place and pass security protocols and all that stuff in the space for him. But when he was there, I mean, you could tell it's like, definitely wasn't messing around, but at the same time, like, he put you at ease. He wanted to do exceptional work, and, you know, we love a challenge, right? Like, you know, if we're in a space where we want to lead something, we love the challenge of, is it going to be high quality? Is it going to move the way it needs to move? How efficient is this? How put together is this? And it was just like a great challenge to get up for and be excited about. And we're really proud of the result, you know? So we won an Emmy for that, you know, for that piece.
Not too shabby.
Yeah. So it was awesome. That was a special time for sure.
Now, how did you meet Kid Cudi?
So that was just through the Brand Complex. So they reached out, and asked if I wanted to, you know, lead something with Cudi. And, you know, originally it was just going to be a, like kind of a retrospective on his first album and just understanding his impact and who he was as a person. And also once you start having conversations with super talented, creative minds that worked on something a decade ago, they're super proud of it, but they're about what came after that. And so there was a different level of interest and connection when it came to looking at things more holistically and what's more present in the mind versus trying to dig into the archives and talk about something that, you know, existed a decade ago. And then me personally, I was just super excited about just the creative process on all levels, right? And so all those things kind of informed our early conversations and kind of led to where we took the film.
That's awesome. So then how did the Man Called Scott begin? Like, this all started like it was just supposed to be a retrospective, but it turned into something a little bit bigger.
Yeah. I think, I mean, a lot of it, man, it was like, you know, I think it was 2019 early. We started talking about this. We went to Tokyo. Cudi was shooting a cover story piece with Complex at the time. And then they blocked out some time for us to just do an interview, you know, and we sat down and we did this interview, and it was, you know, I think it was probably close to maybe 2.5 hours or so. And just from that, it just kind of just listening to him and connecting with him and seeing where our synergy was, I was like, this just needs to be more. And then I started talking to some of his early producers that worked on his first album and his mixtape. And then again, there was just certain things that kind of started like popping up of like, okay, well, there's just so much more to this. And then me personally, again, like knowing Cudi's music, as a young man, but more so being connected to him as like this cultural figure who made it cool to be incredibly vulnerable and honest.
Right.
And talk about my highs and my really deep lows was really empowering for me. I mean, if it wasn't for him and people like, you know, Pharrell Williams, you know, the black kid who didn't have to live in the stereotype, and could just be as you are and like metal and like rock music and like, you know, like pop and want to be in, want to write, want to be in plays and want to be more dramatic, want to be more in touch with kind of who you are, was really like a powerful, powerful thing. And so, you know, with that in mind, it was about the impact that first album made, but then what's the subsequent result of that, you know, to be one of these culture shifting talents that show up and say, I'm not just going to, you know, check off the boxes of how an artist should perform and become famous and do something totally original. That takes a lot out of you. You know, there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of sacrifice that comes with that. So I was just really excited to look at that from me as a fan, being able to be empowered by this talent, but also subsequently, what is it doing to them to give so much, you know, and matter so much?
What's fascinating is I found it in my life that being vulnerable, a lot of people think that is a weakness, meaning that you're showing a weakness and that guard that we all walk around with on a daily basis, that wall that we put around us, the shell, the armor, whatever you want to call it, is there to protect us from it. Where Cuddy is a complete opposite of that. He goes deeper and more vulnerable. But I find that, at least in my years being on this earth, the more vulnerable you can become, especially in public, the more power you have.
Absolutely.
It is in a world. I mean, I was old school hip hop, man. I grew up in New York in the 80s. I mean, I was, you know, I love hip hop, and hip hop is not the most vulnerable art form. It is all about machista, I mean, being macho and being like, I'm the best. I'm better than you and all this kind of stuff. Look how much money I've got. And then Cuddy comes along and says, nah, man, it's going to be changed. And he literally now made it cool for other artists to be vulnerable. Before him, was there, I mean, really, like at that level that he's at, was there artists that were that vulnerable? Maybe a song or two, but like I'm talking about like a career.
Yeah, I mean, no, and I mean, obviously there's, I don't know the full catalog
of hip hop, but generally speaking.
Talk to it, but I think generally speaking, I think without question, it was like that was his persona, you know, because I think early hip hop, a lot of that music was a form of escape to say like I can exist in this imagination where my circumstance is complete opposite because of the way that I'm presenting this music to the world. And I think that there's always a danger point of always living in that fantasy versus existing in your reality. And
I
think Cuddy was one of those great people who like found the danger of that point and saying, well, I can't continue to pretend. And I'm so much better at this when I'm not trying to create music through all these different filters of what I should be doing. I'm so much better at this if I am just the truest, the best idea I have may not be the cool one, may not be the one that everyone's going to be like, oh, he's so cool, he's so hard ass, whatever, like he can't be fucked with, versus like, this is the best of me. Right. And it takes a lot to do that. But, you know, to your point, you're so powerful when you do it. But it's so hard for people to get over that hump of, man, they're going to make fun of me if I talk about the thing I really want to talk about or if I do the thing I really want to do. And it's really special to watch someone do that because it just gives you the power to say, I can do that. I'm going to be OK, you know, talking about all these things that are really in my heart versus what fits in the formula of popular music.
Right. And I think, and what's also fascinating is that when you as an artist are vulnerable or you're thinking like what you just said, like, oh, I want to really talk about what I want to talk about, but you think you're alone. And thing you realize is like, nah, man, you're not, there's actually probably more people out there who are hurting than living the Instagram life.
Absolutely.
And you can connect with people at a much larger scale as Cuddy does. I mean, you were around Cuddy for a while, obviously shooting this, you know, in the documentary, you talk about this, like there's people who walk up to him, like you saved my life. Like I saw an interview with Pete Davidson. It's like, no joke. Like it was in the doc. No joke. He's, yeah. If it wasn't for him, I would have probably killed myself. Like, that's some powerful. Like, how do you, as an artist, handle that? So how did you see it? How did you see it from Cuddy's point of view?
Well, you know, it's a heavy thing. It's a heavy thing because it is beautiful to have someone show you, you can be this, you can do this as you. Look at me. I did this as me. You can do this as you. That is an incredibly beautiful thing. But then with that, if now you have all these, like, you're now magnetized to all these youth who've, like, you did the thing for me. But you have to understand, like, when I was presenting this, it's not like I was just presenting it and it went away, right? Because a huge part of this movie was trying to remove the separation of the superstar versus the fan and saying we're all artists and we're all on this journey of wanting to create and wanting to express ourselves. Because without that, the vision of looking at someone on a screen or on a stage, you remove reality from them. And they're just this perfect thing that you adore and you just are in awe of. It's the danger of celebrity. And so the idea was to try to eliminate that separation because it also gives more comfort and acceptability for Cuddy as a human being, right? Versus having to be the perfect artist, right? We've all made mistakes. We've all done things that we wish the world, you know, that people don't know about and regrets and that sort of thing, because we're just human. But there's this thing that happens where there's this, like, a lot of that is taken away from certain people. And so, you know, in this capacity with Cuddy and the impact he's made on fans, like, I wanted him to feel safe that he can be who he is on all sides and still be struggling and still trying to get better. Because just like he's lifted up fans, like, fans can lift him up, you know, and continue to do that.
You know, in a small way, man, I found that to be the truth with even my audience, where I go sometimes as an artist, go, like, hard, and then, like, they actually help me up as opposed to me helping them up. It is a weird relationship you have with your fans or your people who listen to you or follow you. Yeah. It is... It is pretty crazy. Now, as an artist, how do you, from your point of view and also from Cuddy's, how do you tap into that creative flow? That thing that artists are able to do where, like, when you go to a place where you can tap into that private well that is yours and yours only, that you can get in there and grab out, like, okay, I'm gonna write this song now, or I'm gonna make this movie now, or I'm gonna write this book now. How do you do it, and how do you think Cuddy does it from being around him as much as you have?
I couldn't tell you about his process as much, you know. Mm-hmm. Cuddy's very private from my experience about his actual music creation process. You know, he likes to make that very intimate space with a small number of people from my experience and my conversations with him. Mm-hmm. I think that just generally your best creative space is when you feel the safest, you know, when you feel, when your energy is good, you know, and I think you're, you know, surrounded in a space where it's like you can pull motivation from different spaces. You know, it's like, I know that if I'm in a good space and I'm excited about doing something, it's really about kind of, okay, how do I break the mold to just get in and just, you know, create that flow and go. And sometimes it's just like, man, I just got to watch the movie I've watched 70 times, you know, that always makes me remind me how much I just love this medium and how much I love being a part of it. And then I can, you know, have that be like, well, I just want to make something that feels like that. Like, someone made this that makes me feel like this. So I want to make that I can feel like that. And so hopefully someone else. So to me, it's like starting that churn of that all those chain reactions, you know? But I think for every, you know, me personally, and that was a lot of the message of the film, is that, like, it's okay that everything's not perfect all the time, but constantly, like, let's try to make that effort to get to that space where we can feel awesome and we can all feel like superheroes and we can all say, like, great, I can do anything right now. And then to take advantage of that moment, don't sit on it, don't waste it, you know, use that energy to into the thing that you love so much.
When you were an athlete, and you were an athlete at a, you know, higher level than most folks, did you get into that flow that athletes talk about? And it is it similar to the flow that you get to as a creative, like that when there nothing, where time stands still, when nothing is there, you're just in the moment and you're just doing your thing. Did that happen to you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's, again, it's like we're all, and it comes with, a, you know, like I talked about before, like good energy, but it also talks about a certain amount of preparation, like confidence that I know what I'm doing in this moment. I'm in shape for it. I've rehearsed it. I've practiced it. I've visioned it. I have an idea of what this thing is at its most beautiful. You know, that's what I've enjoyed about working with artists as much as I've worked with a musician or whatever, because it's all a practice art form that takes a certain amount of dedication and attraction too, that makes you perform at a high level. And when you are in that space of feeling it and knowing that you have kind of built yourself up to do this well and have confidence of like, oh, I know how to cut this. I know how to shoot this. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I know what I love, and I know I'm like in that space to do it. Then that's that ultimate beauty of, yeah, you are just, you stopped thinking, you stopped worrying about all the details, and you're able to just be in it and just react to the moment, you know? I can remember, you know, performing as an athlete, it's the same thing as like when I'm on set, right? And we're finally in it. We've been preparing. So
long, the right? battle been, starts. The battle's so beginning. Long.
The lights are there. The talent is there. The lines are being read. And you know, it's like, okay, that was great. That wasn't good. What do I need to do to make it better? What do I need to do to reach that point of that feeling like, yeah, they're delivering this the way I imagined. And it's better. It's a little bit better. Fuck. Okay, now I know the potential that's there. How do we keep pushing that? You know, or this isn't working at all, but I only have this much time to do this.
And this much money.
How do we reinvent right now, right? I know what my DP, I know how he likes to move. I know how he kind of operates in different spaces when it's not going well or whatever. It's like, okay, how do I take over? Or how do I know he's great at this? Let me step back and let him rock and do his thing. Right. And let me jump over here and make sure it's like talent is given what we need, you know? So it's all those things, right? But it's all those great moments that like, if I worked so hard in my preparation, like I have a plan A, B, C, D, and E. And to me, they all have the potential to be as beautiful, as great, right? Because it's all just like, if A doesn't work, well, B can work. And then we just have to elevate this because then now it's just as good as A. You know?
That's a great way to look at it, man. That's a really great way to look at it. Now, I'm always fascinated with documentarians. Like, how do you, because I've never made a doc. I've edited docs, but I've never made a doc. Yeah. How do you approach creating the story? Is there a structure? Is there an outline? Or are you kind of winging it like a little bit you said earlier? It's like, we did this interview, but like, wait, there's more here. Do you discover it? Or do you have like a target that you're trying to hit and then it just continuously changes as you go forward? How does it work for you?
Well, I consider myself an incredibly efficient creator, you know, meaning like I look at everything as a formula, right? And part of the formula is there's a plan and there's a goal that we want to hit for a quality level. And the other side of the formula is building in the time to experiment and find something that you didn't expect to find. So with this, there was always a clear outline. As we would have more conversations, we're like, oh, okay, we can expand this and we can do more with it. But we're simultaneously shifting our whole plan, right? So it's like, I know this is a great film if we do these seven things, right? But then when we sit down and we have a conversation, say, well, we were planning on him going in this direction, but he went in this direction. So our job is not to force him in the direction we want. It's like, okay, well, how do we now make this special with the space he wanted to go into? I think that's a big part of it. And I've noticed that a lot when I, you know, and I learned that in a different way, because doing the shop, because there's seven or eight different people there that are completely different human beings, and we may plan and coordinate, you know, 30 things we want to talk about, but four of them no one cares about, or they don't matter anymore, or they're afraid to talk about, or whatever, versus this other thing we didn't expect. Well, we need to just go with that, and it's my job to, with that dialogue and that emotion that we're bringing out, okay, well, how do we complement that visually? How do we complement that with music? How do we complement that with like a package that elevates what we imagine versus the reality that we got to?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And then also it's like, you know, I am, you know, I don't know what I am. You know, I never thought of myself as like personally, I'm not a humongous fan of documentary. Mm-hmm. So, and it doesn't mean I don't like it. It's just more of like, I never thought I would just kind of make something this way, you know? And so I think that's part of my approach too, because when I looked at this film and I started getting the pieces together there and starting to put the whole thing together, I said, well, part of this should feel like storytelling, you know, just authentic documentary storytelling. Part of this should feel like a commercial for creativity. And we want to build all these beautiful artistic commercial packages for creativity, these little tangents that we go on. And part of it should feel like a play, you know? So that's how I kind of looked at all those different pieces.
Yeah. A lot of times young filmmakers coming up, they don't understand a lot of times that there's so much control that they want to have on their process. And the thing is, as you get older and you've been in the game longer, you just realize like you can't. You got to kind of you just can't. I always tell people when I'm shooting a movie or something, I'm like, hey man, I'm trying to catch lightning in a bottle. And when the lightning goes another way, I'm like, okay, how can you? So it's a constant, like, it's almost like a fight with another, you know, you're in the ring and you don't know where the punches are going to come. You know, there's going to be a fight, you know, there's a punch coming, but you have no idea where it's coming from. So you're constantly just flowing with whatever is being thrown at you and adjusting and adjusting. Is that a great, it's a good definition of what we do?
Yeah, I think so for sure. Again, and that comes with preparation. Like if I'm prepared, right? For like, if this is, and I'm not only preparing and just like experience and time doing this, but preparing for what shifts could look like, you know? You know, I spent 3 years working with Diddy and traveling with him and creating for him and writing for him and producing. And there were a lot of times with him and other talent where you show up to do something and they're like, I don't want to do this. You know, well, we built this set and it's faced this way and this is where all the lights are. No. And it's like, I don't want to do this. So it's like, it can't be now me spending 2 hours trying to create something that works. It's like, okay, if he's not going to do this, I know I can just turn this one light and we can do it against this space, you know, because I think that's how I got a lot of, that's where a lot of my came from. I'm film or purchase, like, but I understood what it was like to be on location with a big talent and to know I have 30 minutes, but I don't want to make it look like I shot something that took 30 minutes. I want to make it look like I shot something that was 2 days and we had a big, crazy budget. So it's like, okay, well, there's four walls in here. Each wall is a completely different world. Right. And if I have two lights, there's like something I could do on this wall, but then something more silhouette by just pushing it over here and having him stand up here, you know? So it's like aggressive blocking and how do we kind of move them around a space and, you know, push this to do more. So I think it's a lot of that. Like, exactly. It is a fight in the ring and it's like a fight of like what I want. You know, there's the crew there and some people are just there to get the check. Some people are there because they really care about your vision, but no one cares about your vision as much as you do. Right. And then there's talent on the other side who, like, maybe they don't want to be there. You know, like, how much time do they really have? They're not really into it. So it's just kind of saying like, okay, well, here's four alternatives that I can prepare for. And they're going to work. Right. We've rehearsed it. We've had the stand in. We know this is going to play. So we just kind of, you're right, reacting, pushing back when you need to, letting go of certain things.
Throw a couple punches when you need to.
Throw a couple punches, absolutely, bro. So,
no, it's and I always talk about the insanity of what we do, because we're insane. Like everything you just talked about to a civilian, I call them the civilians, it sounds insane. It sounds like, you know, for someone who works 9 to 5, and has and collects a check to go into that scenario with P. Diddy, with Diddy, and you go in there and you're just like, I'm not going this way today. And you're just like, but we got 30 minutes and like, and the sun's going down and oh, this is not working. Oh, where's the, oh, the cards aren't, oh, the camera's not working. Like, it's a constant state of stress. but yet we walk into that ring all the time. And we actually, when we're not in the ring, we're like, damn it, man, when can I get back in that ring?
I wish I was doing something.
Right. Sure. It's an insanity, but it is a beautiful insanity. It really is a beautiful insanity.
It is, man. I feel super blessed every day, you know, that, you know, I get to live in that insanity, but it drives your anxiety when you're doing it. Your anxiety is heavy when you're not doing it because you wish you were doing it. So it's a wild thing, man. And I can't make sense of it, but it's, you know, when you get to stop and appreciate the product that you're making or stop, wow, I could be doing so many other things. You know, when I stopped playing, you know, sports and I left my scholarship behind, you know, I moved to New York, like I wasn't just getting production jobs. You know, I did worked at restaurants. I did data entry, you know,
shooting cats, taking photography of cats.
Yeah. you know, and it took a long time for, you know, something to break through. And so like obviously we get stuck in our own prisons, but every now and then I can take a step back and be like, wow, I still get to spend time having conversations like this with you, or, you know, or I'm at an edit now and this really cool series I'm doing. And so it's just, you know, it's wild, man. It is insane. It is crazy. I wish I could just go live in a farm in the woods, but then I hate that after.
Can I ask you a question? Was there ever a moment that you just said, I can't do this, man. I can't do that. I gotta go find something else. Like you try to quit. I've tried to quit multiple times in my 25 plus years doing this. Uh-huh. And every single time the voice inside me says, well, what else are you going to do?
Right. Yeah, I think so. You know, I still think I'm fairly young in this. I mean, I've always only kind of worked as a true director, maybe, you know, eight, 9 years. And so,
But those early days when you were waiting tables doing data entry, you were like,
yeah, sure. You know, my thing was more of just like, never quit. Mm-hmm. No, it never occurred to not doing it. It was just so cool to even like tip your toe in the space. You know, I come like, you know, I'm from a small town in Michigan, like for me to being in film and television and meeting people and doing cool stuff was never a reality. So me just being like proximity was always like a home run for me. And then once I, you know, I kind of got into it, there's certain things I realized, oh, I don't want to work in this type of production. So it was always like, okay, well now it's time to shift and do something different, you know? So that was always like the solution I always came to, but it was never like, I want to walk away and do something. And that, you know, let's talk in a year, you know, maybe I'm at that place then, you know, but for now it's really cool. It's really beautiful. And I just, you know, I just try to just keep myself busy doing different things, you know, and
right.
You know, as much as I can.
You know? So, I mean, you said you hung out with Diddy for 3 years. I mean, I'm sure there's many off air stories you can tell. I'm sure there's plenty you can't tell on air, but, what was, you know, being around a high achiever like Diddy, I mean, he's a legend.
Yeah.
What were some of the things, what were some takeaways you got from what he does and how he does it, man?
He was really great, man. He taught me about, you know, he's incredibly demanding. He had a way of pulling out the best of you by constantly, constantly challenging you. And it's always overwhelming, but you learn to do a lot with very little. You learn to do great work very, very fast. You learn to be proactive and not wait because nothing is given to you, you know? And, you know, it was, you know, he was my first mentor without question and an amazing mentor to have.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was always great. It was, of course, it was incredibly tiring and draining and you're traveling a lot, but man, it was an aggressive lesson in just figure it out. Cause I need it done. You know what I mean? Those were a lot of the conversations were just like,
I don't know how you're going to do it, but just do it.
Care about time or what I need it done. And you're here. And there's 50 other people that would love to be you. So you gotta figure it out, you know? And that aspect, and of course there's some, crazy wild things, you know, That's definitely an off-air combo, but
like, yeah, of course.
But he was great, man. You know, he was. It was. I really, and it was really great because you know he was on the HBO show The Shop. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of years ago, and I hadn't seen him in a long time. And it was just so great because he has this incredible ability to, like, I don't know if it's everyone or if there's a certain type of character that he connects with, but you know, it was an instant reconnection, and you know, he has this great way to kind of dial into where you are and that sort of thing. And so it was just great to connect, and it was, you know, so, but yeah, it was a fast moving, wild time, man.
It's like jumping in with Mike Tyson when he was 21. It was like, all right, you're gonna learn how to fight.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. No question. Now, back to Cuddy though. When the movie was done, what was his reaction to it? I mean, because I can only imagine, as someone did a documentary on me, that me to sit down and watch a documentary on my life. What is that? What was his reaction?
That's huge, man. And that's the biggest thing for me. It's like, it's a person, right? It's a human being right. that I'm, you know, asking to go to dark places and asked to talk about embarrassing things. Like, would I be willing to do that myself? You know. It was great. You know, it was really, he was very trusting and very hands off, which was really great. We had one period halfway through where he came and he sat, he looked at it, and, you know, he, you know, it was a little heartbreaking to me. He asked to remove, you know, probably 90% of the archival that we had in the film.
Oh, wow.
And so that was really, really heavy. Because no, I wouldn't say 90%, but a large chunk.
Like you were cutting out my liver.
Archival, and you know, with respect to him, you know, he has his reasons for why he didn't want it, and I totally respect that. But it was, you know, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really great. But other than that, he was very minimal with his feedback, but it was really, really cool. It was about, I'd say, 2 weeks before our premiere. He called and he said, you know, I've never been able to watch this, like, not as a producer and giving it critiques, but I got to watch it. And he said that he watched it, you know, multiple times with people, you know, 3, 4, 5 times, and said, like, it was incredibly beautiful and emotional. And he was just so happy with it. So that was huge. And then on our premiere, you know, his mom came up to me and said, you did such a beautiful job showing my son.
Oh,
that's it. I'm done. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, you got mom's approval, yeah. Man. You're good to go.
It's mom, man. You know what I mean? It's mom. So that changed everything for me, you know? So.
And what are you working on next, man?
A bunch of stuff. So I just wrote a feature that, I'm going to hopefully get into, and direct sometime the end of next year. Nice. And I was just tapped to write and direct another feature. So we're just kind of working through that, which is really cool. And then I'm directing, a series on Shaquille O'Neal right now for HBO,
nice.
Which is really cool. So it's multi-part, four, you know, films on Shaq. So we're really, really excited about that. There's a couple other projects that are kind of in the pipeline that are, you know, in that kind of wobbly space, but I just love kind of doing a bunch of everything, you know
what
I mean?
That's awesome, man.
It's so cool to be able to do this. So, you know, some commercial stuff that I'm going to do, coming up soon. That I'm excited about, again, just feature, and then some other doc projects, whatever kind of makes sense. You know, it's like great characters, great opportunity, great, opportunity to really push things creatively. That's what I'm always looking for. It's just, you know, I was really excited about things that I felt like I hadn't seen in, mm-hmm. in this type of genre. And I was able to try them on Cuddy, and, you know, they, for the most part, played out the way that I wanted, and mm-hmm. it was really cool. So, you know, any opportunity I have, whether it's in the, you know, scripted or unscripted space or commercial space or experiential, you know, I'm just mm-hmm. super down.
Now, I always like to ask this question to directors. Was there a day making this film that you felt the entire thing was going to come crashing down around you? Because there's always that one day that we all have, even on a music video, even on a music video commercial. Yeah. So what did you do to, what was that situation? And then if you could tell, and how did you get over it?
Well, there were certain, you know, certain things in schedule and that sort of thing that were a little bit difficult. You know, Cuddy's very, very busy. And there's certain things that we wanted to do, but we had a certain timeline for when we had to deliver the film and all that other stuff. And we had a bunch of kind of days that we shifted in the calendar. One, you know, at a point when it became a bigger thing, you know, there was a, like, again, it was like we talked about something much smaller. Then it became a much bigger thing. So there was like definitely like a shift in calendar. There was at one point it seemed like we were only going to have our one interview with Cuddy that we shot in Tokyo up front. So that made us shift and really imagine the product in a very, very different way. And then schedule shifted back and we were able to go to Italy to shoot a second time with Cuddy, our second big interview. So, you know, there's certain points when you're like, you imagine making something and the schedule shifts, time shifts, people, access to people changes. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you look at it, you're like, well, wow, with this reality, this is going to be a much lesser product. And we'll do our best to try to reinvent with what we have. But there's no question it's a much or less product. And to me, that's just devastating. I don't want to put out anything that I don't feel like is special and, you know, has some impact, you know, to humans. So, you know, there's a lot of moments where I'm like, fuck, then it's, I'd be better off not finishing it if we just know we're going to have to make it this such as low quality. I mean, I wouldn't do it, but yeah, I definitely had thoughts like that, moments like that for sure.
Now I'm going to ask you a few questions. I ask all my guests, what is the lesson that took you the longest to learn, whether in the film industry or in life?
I'm not as cool as I think I am. Not as funny as I think I am. All that stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
That was it, man. A self-awareness, man.
You know? Yeah.
I look at, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm just like him. Or
I'm just like, I'm just like Diddy right there. I mean, look, I can do it like Cuddy.
I'm figuring it out, man. So it took a long time, but understanding that lesson and understanding your place and being more accepting of who you are and who you aren't has been magical.
Oh, isn't it? But that only happens as you get a little bit older. Yeah. Yeah. Cause when you're a kid, you think you're that cool.
Yeah. Of course, man. You think you do everything. You think you look like Will Smith or whoever, you know, you think all these things like, oh, that's not it at all.
That's not the way the world works. Oh, okay.
That's a beautiful, beautiful lesson to learn, you know.
Now, what did you learn from your biggest failure in life, either in the film business or in life?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it is just that I think it's an extension of this self-awareness thing, that things that kind of fell apart in my life was that I wasn't listening to my gut enough. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't listening to other people enough that have your best interest at heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important thing to understand, who really needs to consist of your circle, which will ultimately be very small, and to make sure that you're giving as much as you're getting, and being vocal about that on both sides. You know, I think we all need to be appropriately selfish in life, right? Of who you're choosing to, because other people are thinking this way too, right? And you're not the only one.
Right.
I think that goes back to the first self-awareness thing. I remember one day I had it like clicked in my head. I'm like, oh, man, I was talking about how annoying or whatever this person is. How many people think that about me? You know? I'm like, whoa.
Boom.
What can I be doing, right? To make sure that, you know, I'm someone who is, you know, worth interacting with to other people.
Sure.
And worth someone else's time. And then vice versa, and giving yourself that self-worth that, you know, you're worth someone's time too, but you have to be putting a certain amount of effort and honesty and support to do that, you know, for yourself and others.
What advice would you give a filmmaker trying to break into the business today?
You know, just don't wait for anything, you know. Mm-hmm. And nothing has to be in a certain formula. You don't have to have this much money or this much time to do something. You can just easily reinvent it. I don't have the money to make a 1 hour thing, but I have the money to make a 10 minute thing. Mm-hmm. Just go make a super rad 10 minute thing and get that out there, you know. And you just have to be your own cheerleader. No one's going to care about your thing as much as you do. So you constantly have to be the one who's talking about it, telling people about it, and listening, you know, listening to, okay, this isn't making an impact on you. who else isn't it making an impact to? And I need it to be big. I need people to look at it and realize I'm a resource and I should be bought in to work on more things and have more opportunities. So it's really about just being proactive. You know, I think that was the best thing for me, you know, not, you know, my first job in production was working in a video library and I got that job by accident. And, you know, within, you know, 6 to 8 months, you know, I turned that into, I didn't have the job, but I was writing and producing for producers that were there doing commercials. And so from that, it was like me being proactive, you know, it didn't necessarily give me the role that I wanted at that job, but I learned a ton and I instantly knew like what my place was there versus what my place could be somewhere else versus just waiting for someone to retire or quit or, you know, recognize me. I said, I'm going to force you to recognize me. You
know, and so that is, and the funny thing is, that's exactly how I started my business. I worked in a video, a video library at a commercial house in Miami, cutting reels on 3/4 inch. And then I got into editing. So I didn't write and direct. I got into editing and that's how I broke out of that. But it was a great opportunity, man. You learned a lot doing, hey, video, working in the video vault, you learned a few things.
You learn a ton of things, man. And I think that's what's really cool is like you can, any space you can get into, there's so much to learn.
You can't
just be sitting and just doing the three things you're asked to do. Because part of the reason somebody's asking you to do something is because like, oh, it popped in their mind when they're running past you thinking of 4 other things that they have to do. They're like, oh, shit, I can just pass this off to Randy. Okay, do this and this and this. Versus like, hey, you know, I noticed with this show coming up, we usually do this and this and this time. Can I do this for you and do it in less time, you know?
Yep, that's exactly right. And last question, man, 3 of your favorite films of all time.
7. That's what made me want to do this.
Amen.
I will never forget when that movie ended and how in shock I was. And
what's in the box? What's in the box? The
credits roll on. Amazing. That. It's amazing. Literally, I know like where I was and the moment I was, why I was there and all this stuff. And so that was really, something special for me. Man, that's a hard question because that one always just jumps to me because it matters so much to me. I love Boogie Nights. I think it's just so PT. Epic and so phenomenal and so funny and so
heartbreaking,
not funny, unique and beautiful and raw all at the same time. That was always something that was so special for me. And then a good 3rd one, you know, I'd probably say like, I would think of like a, I don't know if it's like my favorite, but it's like the funnest movie and I just love it stylistic and visually, but Fifth Element, there's something about
love
that.
Love Fifth Element, man. Fifth Element is brilliant. It's brilliant. It's Chris Tucker at the heights of his power.
Yeah, he was so, and it was like for him to be so important and he didn't show up to like 45 minutes into the movie, but his entrance is like on par with anyone else's film entrance and just how funny and beautiful that movie is and how pretty that score is and just
it's crazy.
I don't know, and how fast it moves and all that, you know, it just makes you just you know,
it's a great list, man. Great list. And then where can people see your new film?
Well, Cuddy's on Amazon Prime. A Man Named Scott is on Amazon Prime streaming now. And it's really cool. It's really cool, honestly, to start on something like that in 2019. And it's finally out in the world. I can stop thinking about it. It's been sitting on a shelf for a while.
Right.
But, it's been really cool to get it to this place. And, you know, it was definitely worth the wait. So,
Robert, man, thank you so much for being on the show, brother. I truly appreciate it. Thank you for making this documentary. I hope it really does enlighten people on the path of an artist and what they can do themselves and empower them as well. So I appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Real quick, that's the thing of this film is that it's a power song. Like when you go to the gym and you need a song to put on to keep you going, this song is it's literally for creative people that at any space, at any level, want to be creative. It's like, hopefully you find a 20-minute chunk in there that you can just loop over and over again. And like, that's my motivation and energy for creativity.
So it's the eye of the tiger for creativity.
Yeah. Absolutely. 100%. That's the goal, man. That's truly the goal. 100%.
I appreciate you, brother. Thanks again, man.
Thanks, man. All right. Have a good one, dude.
I want to thank Robert so much for coming on the show and dropping his knowledge bombs on the tribe today. Thank you so much, Robert. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to watch his new film, A Man Called Scott, The Kid Cudi Story, head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/524. And again, that amazing documentary is on Amazon Prime right now. Thank you again so much for listening, guys. As always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast at IndieFilmHustle.com. That's IndieFilmHustle.com.